On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
The Irish Mail on Sunday. GP warning, we're facing collapse next. GP and out-of-hours practices are on the brink of collapse this winter as the health service struggles to deal with COVID-19, a doctor has warned. Dr. Ilona Duffy, who you may have heard speaking to Susan Keogh on News Talk Breakfast already this morning, has expressed grave concern about whether GPs will be able to cope under the wave of pressure after a week in which the collapse of the HSE's contact tracing system dominated headlines and weaknesses in nursing home protections were exposed. And indeed, my own family GP was telling me during the week that he has already had loads of people calling him up asking if he can conduct the contact tracing phone calls on their behalfs, and he has been completely swamped with that. And it's perhaps just an illustration of one of the extra pressures that GPs are facing this winter. Let's talk about that and all other things to do with how the health service is responding to COVID-19. We're joined on the line now by the Chief Executive of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Gavin.
Thanks very much for taking our call this morning, because I'm sure you have plenty of things to occupy your mind this long weekend. We will talk about ViraPro and contact tracing and everything else in just a few minutes' time. But first of all, can you give us the latest as regards the number of close contacts being reported by positive COVID-19 cases? Because there appear to be some positive indications that maybe the numbers are coming down a little.
Yeah, and just so now, this has been a very difficult week for everybody, particularly for people who've lost their jobs, and hopefully for a period of time, but some business having to close. So in terms of positivity rates of the testing that we're doing, we have seen it continuously reduce over the past 8 days. Now, we should qualify, it's still at a very high level of just over 5.5%, but we can take good positivity out of that because it has come down from almost 8% to 5.5%. So
that means that of all the tests that are being taken on a daily basis, about 5.5% of them are positive, and that's a lower proportion than was previously the case. Okay.
Yes, so it's come down each day, which is important too.
And then about the close contacts that are being reported by those who are positive.
Yeah, two things we can say about close contacts so far, and again, it's early, but certainly the average has now gone down to 3, and that had been about 4.5, so that's good. And secondly, what's good is what we are seeing now is the majority of close contacts are generally household family contacts, which is good, more than social. You know, so it is within the house, it is within the home. Which emphasises the absolute real importance for people to restrict movements. And I saw Dr. Neil O'Connor just making this point this morning on Twitter. It's absolutely essential that people, as they are identified as a close contact, that they do restrict their movements for 14 days, regardless, and even if they're tested negative, they still have to restrict their movements for 14 days, and that's absolutely essential. And indeed, employers, I saw a reference in employers there, asking people to come back to work if they've had a negative test. That is not the case at all, and the only way we'll control this is restricting movements appropriately.
Yeah, certainly the isolate part has been a little bit overlooked, and that people are supposed to bunker down, unfortunately, as inconvenient as it is. There was actually some reporting in the last couple of days that maybe part of the reason why contact tracing had become so overwhelmed last weekend is because the phone calls are taking longer and longer, because people, when they are called by the contact tracing teams, is there some sort of resistance on their part that they try to second guess what they're being told, or that they're simply resistant to being told that they're a close contact because of the fact that it requires them to isolate?
Yeah, and I'll give you some insight on that specifically, but I think the first point you just made about generally systems becoming overwhelmed, and this is a European trend, and I just know this morning Spanish government are convening an emergency meeting of their cabinet right now as we speak to consider putting in a state of emergency. Belgium, if you just take Belgium, and I'm just making these points to say where the virus is uncontrolled across Europe, Belgium yesterday had, which is double the population of us, yesterday had 600 hospital admissions. And they have stopped testing asymptomatic contacts. Now, just to put in context, double our population, that would mean 300 admissions into hospital for us. Now, thankfully, yesterday we had 24 admissions. But it does give you an indication of the uncontrolled levels of the virus, and certainly what happened with us last weekend was certainly a function of that as well. But specifically in your question in relation to calls, yes, what we are seeing are calls taking significantly off, probably double the time that they were taking at the start of this. More volume of calls and more complex calls that we're having to make as well. So, you know, that is a feature as well. So uncontrolled levels, more complex, more calls is having a significant impact.
There is a piece, I think it is in today's Sunday Independent, which explains that the heads of the contact tracing teams do report back at the end of every day with their returns, and therefore the HSE centrally ought to be able to build a picture fairly quickly, of how many contact calls still have to be made, the backlog that's beginning to build up. Basically, if all of that is true, and if the HSE is able to compile a picture on a daily or a nightly basis, then it would sort of beg the question as to how last weekend was allowed to happen, because surely you would have seen this pressure building up and building up and building up to the point where this kind of circuit breaker was needed. So how is it that the system felt like it was so taken by surprise with this?
Yeah, and look, I've been out up front all week. Last week shouldn't have happened to the extent that it happened, but we did. It was one of those overwhelming weekends where 3,500 calls, having to be made. I mean, and just to put it in context, we went from 8,000 calls per week to 28,000 calls per week in a very short period of time, and that certainly culminated in last weekend. And not having the required resources in place, but, you know, there has been a challenge for us just in scaling the resource recruitment levels that we're at. We've now 270 people recruited. And in essence, what caught up last weekend was an absolute uncontrolled levels in the community and caught us. And that's frankly what happened. Should put it in context, there was just short of 2,000, 1,970. For cases that we couldn't get, and that's not good. But we have got to, we made 250,000 calls to contact, and we are one of the few European countries who are actually systematically testing contacts. Not all countries are doing that in a systematic way. So, certainly I regret what happened last weekend, and we fixed it. But just to give you a real strong urge to your listeners that we really need them to help us turn this around. And as I mentioned this morning, we are seeing positive trends. But, the testing won't turn the trend around on its own. Building ICU capacity won't turn this trend around on its own. It's really what the public do and our own individual behaviours turn it. And I'm getting encouragement from what I'm seeing.
No, and all of that is true. But, of course, there is something of a social contract here where the public has to put up with certain restrictions on the perception that the state is going to build the system that can deal with the virus as and when it arises. And the Taoiseach was pretty clear this week that, as far as he was concerned, the government had given the HSE enough resources. And if there was an issue with contact tracing last weekend, part of it was to do with a delay in recruiting people to staff that service. Is that a fair characterisation?
Yeah, and in fairness, I've said this publicly this week, any time we've gone forward for funds, we have had support from government. What we have been concentrating on, particularly during the summer, is building the testing and tracing system on a more sustainable level. And just look at what has been achieved. And the Irish testing and tracing system is recognised across Europe as being extremely strong. We've tested 1.5 million tests on the island, a quarter of a million contact tracing calls, two contacts we've made, and they're part of the process. What we did during the summer were four things. Firstly, build up the number of community testing centres and recruit swabbers through that. Secondly, improve the logistics of the transfer of those swabs to more efficient testing. Thirdly, build up our lab capacity to now over 120,000, and we will be building further over the coming weeks. And finally, the recruitment of tracers. And certainly, yes, last weekend caught us on the pace of the community transmission ahead of where we were recruiting the people. And that's frankly what's happened.
Is there a concern, though, Paul, much as you can't just manufacture capacity overnight and these things take time to work up, is there a serious danger that if you had, say, 2,500 people who tested positive last week and there is a delay or some lapses in the carrying out of contact tracing, that those people could therefore have 10,000 close contacts, perhaps a large number of them could themselves be positive, and that you therefore have more people seeding the virus out in the community, and that this is the real sort of thing that causes the state to be in the back foot, and that the virus can then therefore get further out of control as a result of all of this?
But the reality of it is, as the virus has got further out of control, and it has over the past number of weeks, which has obviously resulted in the government make the decision that it's made on level 5, but it has been at an uncontrolled level in the community, and that's frankly what happens. Now, specifically related to those 2,000 people for last weekend, I can say we've started to call them over this weekend, and throughout yesterday and throughout today. We're starting to random call them just to assess how they have got on in terms of their making their contacts last week. And one positive we'll take out of it is, again, what the feedback we're getting is vast majority of their contacts were household. So we would immediately expect if somebody has been a positive case, that they would, their, you know, household contacts would have restricted themselves immediately. So, but we are continuing to contact them throughout the day just to assess how they get on in that process.
Okay, fair enough. Can we talk about the issues with the ViroPro sanitizer and the other products that they've been distributing? We heard yesterday from your agency that over 1 million items of their stock have already been distributed. How quickly can they be recalled and then replaced with something which is known to be safe?
Yeah, look, obviously this was a concern for us as it was identified, and we have, we, as you just said, we had about 3.1 million of this stock in total. 2.1 million of it was still in our warehouses, so 1 million were in the process of recalling and put in a pretty significant logistics process to do that. From our perspective, the single product was the hand sanitizer gel, so it wasn't other ViPro products out there, but we are putting a recall notice out to the whole hospital and health system, just in case they locally procured any other ViPro products. So we're in the process of recovering that right now. What I would say, it's on a percentage term, it's about 7 or 8% of our total sanitizer product, the volume of this. So thankfully, it's a lower percentage of our total purchase for hand sanitizers. And we have secured an alternative line now to replace that 7 or 8%.
Which obviously, it's reassuring that it's such a small capacity. But if there's no ethanol in this sanitizer, then, and if it's only methanol, then it's literally not a cleanser at all. So it must be slightly worrying that 7 or 8% of the product that was sent around, in fact, has no sanitizing properties at all.
Yes, and look, the full assessment between the Department of Agriculture and ourselves is obviously being done in terms of what I would say is early indications are that it is a lower level of risk. But again, I need to see that process completed. But certainly our own infection prevention and control teams, they will be working with the Department of Agriculture, but, you know, the early indications are that it's a lower level of risk.
Are you happy to stand over the way in which this product was procured? Because if people go and look at the records of ViroPro, this is a company that was established only in April. The manufacturer, or the distribution rather, distributor that was sending all of this around, was in itself only established in April as well. People would be entitled to wonder how a company and a distributor, which have basically no track record at all of manufacturing and distributing this sort of very sensitive product, can manage to get included in a preferred suppliers list for the HSE.
Yeah, look, nobody would want it to happen this way. There are various occasions in terms of various product lines that we would have to make a recall on, medical products, not just ourselves, but European countries. The fact specifically on this one was that there was a material safety data sheet, which is what a supplier supplies, and that's validated based on WHO guidance of quality. So that is a process that was validated. But look, this is a process we will definitely be looking at with the Department of Agriculture as well, jointly, because, you know, product recalls are not good, particularly not good in the health system. But they do happen.
Can I ask you briefly about some of the guidance in schools? And I think there's been plenty of people who are involved in the management of schools, principals and the like, who seem to be at their wit's end this week because they on the ground simply don't feel, given the number of cases locally, that a school is safe to open. And there was a couple of instances where some principals took the executive decision to close their schools and then were countermanded by the HSE, who ordered them to reopen. Can you explain exactly what process goes on there and whether you feel the HSE is appropriately staffed to deal with the growing number of referrals that you might get from principals?
Yeah, and look, I understand the frustration from principals and everybody, I think the whole nation wants to work to keep schools open, including principals and teachers and ourselves and Department of Education. Just specifically, if I can bring you through what does happen or what has happened and does happen, we've carried out mass testing in 634 childcare facilities now, mainly schools, since we've gone back, the schools come back. That's about 16,000 pupils and teachers have been tested, and a positivity rate of about 2.8% at the moment, which is significantly lower than the positivity rate that we were just talking about in the community. So first of all, schools are not the biggest source, as in schools, but there is strong indications it comes from the community and the schools. Certainly the outbreaks are up, but we're equally seeing they're up from transmission in the community. What our public health teams do is they take a risk-based approach. So they go into a school, a case is identified, they immediately identify whether it's the whole class to be tested, whether it's the whole school to be tested. They work with the school principals and they assess, they do a risk-based assessment. They look at the safety, they look at the transmission level within the school, they look at the transmission level within the local community, they look at capacity of the school to implement further infection prevention control measures, and they take a risk-based assessment whether a school should shut. Now, I should say, I would argue very strongly, it has worked very well. I fully accept frustrations at the moment from everybody with the uncontrolled level we're dealing with. But again, this comes back to a really public call to turn this trend around.
Sure.
But the public health teams do take what's a very clear risk-based approach.
And are you satisfied that there is enough of them, or is there any plan to try and increase that resourcing? Because you have plenty of schools who feel like they find it very difficult to get a visit or advice from a public health team.
Well, look, our public health teams have been the unsung heroes. They played a blinder from the start of this pandemic, and they still continue to do, and many of them have worked without breaks at weekends. So just say that we do need more of them. We are going to do, the baseline workforce was about 250 at the start of this. In public health teams, it's about 550 at the moment, but we are in a recruitment campaign to recruit 160 public health specialists directly to help us. But, you know, it's an uneasy process. They're not all out there, but we are recruiting and they do need more resource.
Okay, fingers crossed they do get the respite that they need sooner rather than later. Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Paul Reid there, Chief Executive of the Health Service Executive.